KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at kuow.org/USA.
Fly Emirates. Hello tomorrow.
When you consider your year-end charitable giving, please remember KUOW. Gifts of stock and appreciated assets are a great way to support KUOW and receive tax advantages at the same time. For more information, contact us at 206-221-2732 or email majorgifts@kuow.org.
We have a mix of clouds and sunshine, 48 degrees right now in the U District. We're expecting sun the rest of today, the high reaching 49.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm David Hyde. Domingo Martinez has lived in Seattle for nearly two decades. His new book is a memoir about growing up in the Texas border town of Brownsville. He also talks about why he moved to Seattle and why he stayed. It's called The Boy Kings of Texas. It's a New York Times bestseller, and it was recently nominated for the National Book Award. Domingo Martinez, thanks so much for joining us, and congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me here.
So your book starts with a song. It's called El Rey, or The King in English.
Yo sé bien que estoy afuera, pero el día que yo me muera, sé que tendrás que llorar.
So you say you made an important discovery while blasting this song in your Seattle apartment. What was that?
I realized just how Mexican I was after 20 years of not being in Texas, and just how much this song actually resounded with every affliction that my family ever had.
And you say it actually embodies a lot of the tensions that you experienced, the cultural tensions that you experienced growing up in Brownsville. What are some of those tensions, or what's the central tension?
I describe it pretty clearly in my preface, but fundamentally it's this fighting posture that completely defends this completely fragile center of this deep desire of needing to be accepted and loved, but it's completely contradicted by this defiance that will turn on anybody.
And the singer is this guy, Vicente Fernandez?
Vicente Fernandez is the sort of the vehicle, the guy who actually wrote it. He wrote it about 30 or 40 years prior to that. And the guy, I give a brief biography on the guy. He was like completely illiterate in regard to music. He taught himself how to play. Kind of appropriate, since I taught myself how to write. But he wrote, I think, hundreds of songs. And this is one of his most famous, obviously.
One of the people that figures really prominently in this book, as probably a lot of memoirs, is your father. What was your father like?
Dad is nowhere near the person that he is now than he was then. Back then, he was this raging, just mean, tempestuous, overly emotional alcoholic who was in way over his head. And he was suffering from a tremendous case of PTSD, but, you know, that sort of stuff does not go diagnosed in the barrio. Instead, he, like, drank hot lemon tea and went to his witch doctor. And that's how he coped with, you know, this disease that we know of today that's, like, incredibly damaging to people.
And another person that figures prominently in the book is his mother, your grandmother.
My grandma.
Who is just an amazing figure. You tell a lot of interesting stories about her, great stories about her, including some about animals, one about snakes and another about a rooster.
And she kills two ocelots when she's 12. She clubs them both to death. The woman was just a survivor, and she had such a level of, what would you describe, like, macho-ness that just kind of completely, like, passed gender boundaries. And she was very much the matriarch, the person everyone answered to. And it all stemmed from having this really hard scrabble life growing up in, you know, Great Depression Mexico. And then she moved to America, and she just kind of brought those same old world attitudes here, and we all kind of adjusted to her.
Seattle writer Domingo Martinez is here talking to us about his new coming-of-age memoir. It's called The Boy Kings of Texas. You actually describe your grandmother as butch as they come. What is or what was your relationship with your grandmother like?
more than anything else, my role as the youngest boy eventually just turned into jester. You know, I was always the one kid making everybody laugh, trying to sort of neutralize the air. But for the most part, on a one-on-one basis, I just did what Grandma told me. There was a lot of tension with everyone directly because we were all in such a sort of panic state of, like, you know, having to. We were all very uncomfortable with the heat, with the work, with everything that was going on. And so when you had sort of the moment for like a one-on-one talk, they were oddly incredibly tender the few times that, you know, Grandma and I ever actually did anything. But that didn't happen often for the most part. She was also raging and also just very intense and demanding productivity at like any and all costs and at any and all hours. I mean, the woman would never stop.
Domingo Martinez's book is The Boy Kings of Texas, and these stories are incredibly dark, and they're also at times incredibly hilarious. And one of the stories that you tell about your grandmother is about you and raising a pig.
Oh, do you mean the piglet?
Yeah, the piglet.
The piglet. I do tend to use the humor and the language as sort of an anesthetic for the darker moments of the book. And this is definitely one of the darker ones where Grandma, she doesn't really understand consequences to her. What she did was she would always buy pigs very early in the year, and they'd be cheap. They'd be like, you know, $2 or $3. And this one time she came home with an extra pig, and it was a piglet. It was the runt of the litter, and it had like absolutely no chances of surviving. But she, you know, saw it and thought of me because I was a runt. And she said, she's like, come on over and help me raise this pig. The pig died, you know, in like 6 hours later, 4 hours later. And, you know, and it was my pet. But Grandma didn't see the consequences to that. She just saw like a cute little, you know, suckling pig with an apple. No, I mean, I'm kidding. What she saw was this chance, you know, to have like a tender moment. And instead, it like ends up being horrifying to the little boy who's trying to raise a pig, you know.
And pigs also feature prominently in her life every Christmas, right?
Well, they were a metric of wealth for Grandma, you know. And Christmas in particular, I wrote a story about how she uses that day as this sort of as a way to make a whole lot of money because she had raised the pig that she bought early in the year, waits to the end of the year on Christmas holiday, and. She invites her whole family over and they all sort of set upon it with knives and guns. And they kill it, slaughter it, they, you know, cut it into bits and sell it. And everyone has lots of food for days. And Grandma, who just basically watches this whole operation, ends up with all the money. So.
And what was your role? What did the kids do on Christmas Day?
Oh, we were labor. We were just from the moment that when it was time, you know, we weren't hired because we weren't paid, but we were like forced to, like, you know, line up and participate in the different dishes that were being prepared. In particular, I write about the tamales, which I still can't eat today. Actually, that's not true. Her tamales are fantastic. I will eat her tamales, Grandma, when she sends them up, and because she's done that. But what I would do, I was forced to. It's too difficult to describe over the radio, but it was ultimately like spread masa on a corn husk and kind of roll. And this went on for hours and hours. And she would make a tremendous amount of tamales and then sell them throughout the rest of the few months. And again, keep all the money.
Seattle writer Domingo Martinez is telling us about his new memoir, The Boy Kings of Texas, about growing up in the Texas border town of Brownsville. And later we're also going to ask about his time here in Seattle and why he moved from Texas to Seattle. The book's been nominated for the National Book Award, and it's really beautifully written. I was kind of wondering, what kind of a student were you growing up in Texas?
I was a terrible student. I describe in the book how I had a moment of realization where I realized that the time I would spend in school was the only time I was allowed to myself. And school really started to kind of get in the way of that. So I would kind of figure out ways to hang out with the more marginal elements and hijack, you know, somebody's parents' cars and just drive around most of the day, just kind of avoid a school for like 2 or 3 days and then go back and make up all the work. I barely graduated. And it was not from, you know, any sort of obstacle, educational obstacle. It was more just attendance. It was just sheer I was a really bad kid.
You also write about becoming good at competitive cursing, and I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into the details here.
You are.
But why? What was it about competitive cursing that appealed to you and your identity?
Well, the cursing was more, I mean, kids, you know, establishing a hierarchy for the most part, but also it was done in a really creative and challenging sample. I mean, I can completely liken it to the street rap and, you know, the rap contest that they have on stage. They weren't that structured or that interesting, but they kept us entertained and showed us who was on top.
And in general, how well do you feel like you fit in Brownsville at that time?
That's a difficult question to answer because there were parts in different scenarios. Like, for instance, in my grandmother's and father's business, obviously I fit in because, you know, I cut my mouth shut and I just did what they told me to do. Excuse me. When I went to school, it was completely different because there was, you know, the different stratums of socioeconomic sort of interfacing with other students, and I had a completely different idea of who I really was. Because a lot of my book is about sort of re-identification and reinventing oneself, and I would take any opportunity I could to reinvent myself in any sort of new environment that I could, new institution. And I mean, that's what happened when I moved to Seattle. It was like a complete reinvention of self, which is kind of an exaggerated version of what my sisters did when they went to junior high, where they kind of did it all at once. I like took 20 years to do it.
This is the two Mimis?
The Mimis, correct. Yeah.
For people who haven't heard that This American Life story, what was your sister's? It was a different strategy than your own, but what was their strategy?
Mine was more sublimated. Theirs were completely overt. What they did was they dyed their hair completely blonde so that they looked like the two guys from ABBA. And they started dressing in like really upscale fashions for the time, which was Jordache, Gloria Vanderbilt, etc. And in feeling that their names were a bit too ethnic, they just started to call each other Mimi, and which is all fine. But the really interesting aspect was that nobody thought that was weird, and my whole family played along with it.
So people were supportive in the town as well?
Well, you know, you got two hot chicks coming to school. I mean, you know, what are they going to do? It was captivating. You know, everyone, there was a certain allure and I actually explained that in at the end of the This American Life reading, where there was like this magic around them. And they didn't think it was weird. So you didn't think it was weird. And so it just kind of went on until it just kind of just, you know, vaporized on its own.
The book is The Boy Kings of Texas, and it's by Seattle writer Domingo Martinez. It was just nominated for the National Book Award. It's a New York Times bestseller. A lot of the book is about people, but it's also about place. It's about Brownsville. Can you describe a little bit about what it's like physically?
Physically, Brownsville is like a large salt land. it's verdant, yes, but it's like sort of a brownish green. It's completely agriculturally dependent. It's surrounded entirely by farm, and by farm I mean, you know, both citrus and like sorghum grains, etc. It's right at the bottom of Texas, right next to Mexico, and oddly, it doesn't suffer from as much of, you know, the all the stuff that you hear about today, the cartel violence, etc. That didn't happen there then in the 1980s. I don't know. I really can't speak for it now. I mean, I visited recently, but we really didn't get into detail about that. But Brownsville's flat. Brownsville is very proud of a strip mall, you know, a new Walmart going up around the corner. At the time when I was there, it felt like I felt captive. I felt very much trapped, obviously. It's one of the reasons why I ran screaming the minute I was able to. upon revisiting it, the core was still there. I mean, there were still elements of the old Browns, of the way people, what I remembered, not just in place but also in behavior. But also, but it was very different, of course, because, you know, I knew that I had a plane ticket out of there in like 3 days. So my relationship had completely evolved as a result of that, I think.
And you moved to Seattle about 20 years ago.
Correct.
Why Seattle?
My brother's best friend had been stationed at Fort Lewis, and he had met somebody there, and they were living here, and he had convinced my brother to move up here. And my brother at the point himself had just been discharged from the Army and was pretty lost, and decided, you know, I got nothing going on, may as well. I don't think Dan understood how far away Seattle was from Texas, and neither did I when he kept inviting me, you need to come up here, you need to come up here. And I finally, you know, found it on a map and realized it was, you know, next to Canada. Excuse me. And then there was just I figured that the umbilical would not stretch that far. You know, there was going to be some breakage at some point. And I was right. I mean, again, going back to sort of the reinvention of self, coming to Seattle, I felt it was like I didn't want to go to Los Angeles, and I couldn't afford to go to New York. I mean, I would have been eaten alive in either location. Seattle just felt like it was safe. It was like a safer midpoint, and it was also at the time that I moved here, right before the whole explosion, the whole holy grunge city thing, before Soundgarden and Nirvana and all the rest of that, And so it was like this fantastic little secret that I found, and then about 6 months later, everybody else found it too. But just for that, you know, the first few months, it was mine. And I mean, not to take sovereignty over your.
How did Seattle, do you think, shape you as a writer, as a person, but mostly as a writer?
It intimidated the heck out of me because when I was in Texas. I could write anywhere. There was no publication that I couldn't send some samples in there, and I would start as a stringer, and then within a few months I would be on staff, and I just had a natural capacity for language, feature writing especially, and I thought I would take that, you know, same hubris and ambition and move to a real city, and when I got here, you know, people actually have talent here. People read at higher than a sixth grade level, which is kind of what was happening in Brownsville and in South Texas, and so I found it more difficult to compete in that arena. So instead, I decided to be a graphic designer, and I stayed within the industry of words. I just wasn't, you know, producing them. I was designing them. But what that did was forced me to take my own ambition, my personal ambition and the story, and go home with it and work on it at home. And sometimes at work, but mostly at home.
All right. Well, Domingo Martinez, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
The book is The Boy Kings of Texas from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm David Hyde.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.